Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff. In mid-May, some of the prisoners at Crossroads Correctional Center in Cameron, Missouri, refused to leave the chow hall after the evening meal. A few prisoners broke out windows and gained access to the warehouse that held food and canteen items, offices, and production facilities for the prison industries, doing a great deal of damage. Although most prisoners were not involved, they have all been locked down, only getting out for 20 minutes three times a week for showers, phone calls, and to order items from the canteen. As the pressure from the inmates, their families, and advocates has grown, the Missouri Department of Corrections has started to open up lines of communications with prisoners and advocates to explain the delays in opening the facility and resumption of services. Today, host Latara Smith of the KC Freedom Project will talk with Alana Boyles, Director of Adult Institutions, about conditions at Crossroads and the timetable for resumption of services and visiting hours. They will also talk about the beginnings of regular meetings with advocates for the prisoners and some of the Department of Corrections plans for the future. Stay tuned for a quick chat with Michelle Metzke of Corey's Network in the middle of the broadcast and a commentary by Keith Brownell at the end of the broadcast. Coming up next is Latara and her guest.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to KKFI 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and today I am blessed with the opportunity to be able to interview, I have a couple of representatives from the Missouri Department of Corrections, and this is actually the Department of Corrections, actually their first time speaking out to the media. So we at KKFI, we are really blessed to be afforded this opportunity today. I have Mrs. Alana Boyles. Mrs. Boyles is the Director of Institutions for the Missouri Department of Corrections, as well as we have on the line with us Mrs. Karen Poschman. She is actually also with the Missouri Department of Corrections, and I believe Mrs. Poschman handles the media. I think that is exactly what her position. Ladies, are you there?
Good morning.
Ms. Boyles, I'm going to let you start off the interview here. And before I do that, I want to thank the both of you for actually being a part of the interview this morning. I really do appreciate that.
Good morning. Yes, I'm very happy to be here today.
Okay, awesome. Ms. Boyles, you can go ahead and introduce yourself, and then following Mrs. Karen, if you would introduce yourself to the community.
All right. I'm Alana Boyles. I'm the Director of the Division of Adult Institutions with the Missouri Department of Corrections. I've been with the Department of Corrections for about 23 years now, and I oversee the general operations of our 21 correctional institutions here in Missouri.
Awesome. That is wonderful.
And I'm Karen Poschman. I'm the Communications Director for the Department of Corrections. I've been in this position for about a year. I handle media relations, internal communications, and external communications, and that sort of thing.
Awesome, awesome. Well, once again, thank you, two ladies, for being on with us today. Okay, Mrs. Boyles, you know, we all know that there's been, you know, a lot of problems, a lot of concerns, a lot of issues there at the Crossroads Correctional Facility. And we've had, myself and several other community organizations have met with you guys on a couple of occasions in reference to trying to come to some type of medium, come to some type of agreement with, you know, this lockdown situation that's going on over there with Crossroads. And it's most definitely a lot. So Ms. Boyles, what would you like to say to the community? What would you like the community to know about this situation that's going on with Crossroads and how the Department of Corrections is actually dealing with it?
Well, I think one of the most important things to understand is that when we have significant incidents within the department, people make assumptions about the time frame that it takes to come to resolution.
Yes.
And often those time frames are much lengthier than people assume that they are. In this particular incident, we had some damage to the food service area, to the general warehouse, and a vocational factory. And included in that damage were damage to windows, damages to doors and door frames. And when it comes to replacing that type of damage, it does take longer than anticipated. And people often assume that you can go to the store and buy this door and install it. And unfortunately, security doors in this venue are actually custom manufactured.
Right.
And it can take up to 8 weeks for the door to be manufactured. And then you have an installation process beyond that. That has actually been one of our biggest delays, is the number of doors that were damaged and the amount of time to have the doors manufactured for replacement. The other thing that people assume is that you don't have to ensure that operations are practiced and running smoothly before you step forward. One of the issues that we had in this particular instance was our food supply. There's been a little discussion about having a temporary solution by purchasing boxed meals from an outside vendor, but that was really the result of the fact that we had to replace our food supply at that facility, and it takes time to do that.
Okay. Okay. And for those in the community that are actually listening, when myself and other community leaders went in and met with the Department of Corrections officials here a couple of weeks ago, there in their office in Jeff City, I want to say they were totally transparent with us. They sat down, they prepared a very nice PowerPoint for us, and we were able actually to see the damages that had taken place during this riot. So I know that I get many calls and concerns and questions about, you know, oh, it couldn't have been this much damage, you know, for them to be on lockdown this long. And, you know, and I just want to say, for those of you, because I know some of you on the radio don't follow me on social media, I do want to come on here and I want to say this. There most definitely was an extensive amount of damage that was done. Okay. I mean, you're hearing it come straight out of my mouth. There was a lot of damage that was done. And there was also a lot of food and things that were, I mean, all they could do was just throw this stuff away. There also, for those of you who have reached out, okay, and have asked the multiple questions, those of you who are now getting letters from your loved ones at Crossroads that are telling you that their property is no longer available or their property was destroyed, okay, that actually came about as a result of the property room where some of the inmates' property was kept was really damaged. And I mean, it was really bad, people. And so for those of you who did lose those, you know, if that's a complaint of your loved one, I can legitimately say, from what was shown to us on the PowerPoint, that this is not the DOC staff being spiteful and just doing away with your family members' work. This area where paperwork and stuff, this area where this where their property was stored really was looted. I mean, it was bad. Some of the paperwork was, yeah, it was bad, people. So I do most definitely want to make that clear, because I'm getting a lot of those type of letters and calls and emails and stuff. A question here, Miss Boyles, is where are you guys in the repairs of the kitchen because it wasn't just the dining hall. I mean, it was like one whole building. So where are you guys at with that? Because that's a major question that's always coming in. Where are you guys at with the repairs?
So a fair amount of repairs have been completed. The only piece of kitchen equipment that we're waiting on is an oven where the door to the oven was damaged, and some warmer doors where we store prepared food.
Okay.
We have a couple of those that still need repair, and then there's just a couple of other miscellaneous things, some racks that need to be secured, but the windows have been replaced. The hood over the grill has been recharged and repaired, so that's ready to go. Probably the biggest thing has been the doors.
Okay.
And the doors are we're in the process. We're expecting those to show up very quickly, and hopefully have those in place within the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
I believe. So, the installation on a door like that takes a day and a half per door. So it is an intensive installation process. Food supply has been replaced. All the windows have been replaced. All the windows in the cooler and the freezer doors were broken. And there's a little bit of an installation process on those as well. But food service otherwise is clean, and the staff are preparing for these final repairs, and hopefully we can move forward with producing our own food. We're hoping that in conjunction with approximately the first of the month, we'll be preparing meals ourselves.
Okay, awesome.
That's our goal.
Okay, awesome. And so some of the questions that, we ask you guys when we came in to meet with you, I kind of want to go towards a couple of them real quick, because once again, we get these questions over and over and over again. So, but now with several repairs being made in the kitchen, okay, in that kitchen area, one of the main questions that's being presented is, what is the timing? What is possible? If you guys have a rough estimate of timing as to what is the plan of the timing for
right.
for you guys, for Crossroads to return back to regular movement?
Okay, so once we have all the repairs made in food service, we can start a hot meal production.
Okay.
And we'll start with a lunch meal, and we'll move offenders to the dining hall in likely smaller groups than normal.
Okay.
To let everybody get back into the feel of leaving the unit, going into the dining hall, and that normal operation. We'll start with a lunch meal. Once the lunch meal runs smoothly, we'll start with another meal, and I don't know if they'll go with breakfast first, but likely, and then move into the dinner meal. So we'll add those one at a time, but once those doors are installed, we should be able to move pretty quickly with feeding a hot lunch. We had a little interim in between. We had a lot of repairs done, but we're still waiting on the doors. So the staff had the ability to ensure the equipment operated properly, and they did some run-throughs just to make sure that they didn't encounter any other glitches. So I think we're pretty ready to go.
Okay, so you're looking roughly, I know you can't give an exact date.
Yes.
But just kind of roughly, just to give
the construction delay.
Okay. So just roughly to give the people an ideal, just roughly a rough estimate, and people understand this is an ideal. It's not as specific this day and this time or this week or whatever. Just roughly what time period can you provide, if possible?
Well, I think within about the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
We should be in a place where we can get that lunch meal running, as long as we get the doors when they say we're supposed to get the doors.
Okay, awesome. Now, what is the current movement right now at Crossroads, just to clear up a lot of curiosity for people in the community?
It still is relatively limited. So starting today, offenders should be out of their cells 30 minutes a day in smaller groups, meaning an entire wing is not out at the same time, but parts of the population of a wing are out at the same time, and they have the ability to shower and use the telephone and use the kiosk, I believe. And then we're also moving offenders in groups to medical for medical appointments and medications and for mental health appointments. We also have a small number of offenders going to work in a couple of locations in the institution. Some of them are out in the wing. Some of them are going to canteen and working so that offenders are getting their canteen orders. So we're progressing.
Okay. And I do want to say this because I did receive a call actually before I walked in to do the show today from an inmate, an offender there at Crossroads. And he did tell me that they were now out 30 minutes as opposed to last week. It was what, three times out a week, 20 minutes each?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So this week now they're out 30 minutes. So I can confirm that for those in the community. I did get a phone call literally right before I came in to do the show, and the gentleman told me that he was out for 30 minutes and was calling to check in to let me know that time had changed for them. So things seem like they're moving towards. Now, something else I want to say is the inmates' normal movement would be out, if they weren't in the honor dorm, their normal movement at that particular facility would be out, what, 30 minutes, three times a day or something like that? And, of course, movement to rec and, you know, is that about their normal movement? What's the normal movement at that facility?
Well, we should point out that in addition to recreation time, we have many, many programs happening in all of our facilities. So offenders leave their cells to do work, to do, you know, their jobs, to work in the factory,
right,
to participate in programs for education. So it's, I mean, each institution is like a small city. So people are going about their business all day long. And there's some programs that last all day, some vocational programs that are like, you know, basically a full-time job.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And yes, they would have access to be out of their cell multiple times a day. They certainly would have access to recreation. So we're trying to move that direction. The other thing that we're getting ready to institute, I believe, starting with the weekend of August 11th, is to reinstate some limited visiting.
Yes.
And so offenders are being given the opportunity to make arrangements with their families to be able to set up some visiting, which will be a good thing. And then things like mail service. Mail service has not been interrupted at all. There has been no interruption in mail delivery. There has been no interruption in the offender's ability to send mail. That has all remained normal during this process.
Okay, awesome. And that's really good to know, because that's been a lot of the questions that have come in. And I was happy to be able to come back and report to the family members that visitation would resume the weekend of August 11th. And it would be somewhat limited, and you guys were still kind of working out the kinks and the everything to exactly how this is going to go on now. So I'm assuming, will the inmates there at that facility, will they get some type of notification? And okay, and then in return, they can inform their family members of how you guys are going to do movement for visitation. Okay, awesome.
Correct.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I tell you what, the next question, this is just come in so many times. Let me see here. We had talked about the meals. Can you elaborate on the meals, the types of meals that the offenders are receiving at the current time? Because there's been a lot of complaints about that. And so, you know, I want them to hear it from you in reference to, you know, the type of meals and that they are now receiving.
Right. So the boxed meals that we have purchased, they are certainly nutritionally sound. There are approximately a 2,300 calorie per day diet. They are balanced. They meet federal guidelines. I think what becomes a little bit of a challenge is that the variety is a little limited. So when I'm getting a sandwich for lunch, a sandwich type meal for lunch, and a sandwich type meal for dinner, that certainly can become a little monotonous, but it was necessary in this circumstance because our food supply had to be replaced. But the meal did include, you know, of course, a beverage and fresh fruit in addition to the protein item, the sandwich item as well.
Okay.
But, you know, we look forward to reinstating what is our regular menu with the offender population that includes a little better variety.
Right.
So we look forward to that.
Okay. And currently now, the inmates there can go to commissary. Can you explain to the family members and the community, you know, how commissary is moving and what the restrictions may be? Or
Of course, and we were dealing with the fact that our warehouse supply for commissary in the canteen was damaged, and we had to dispose of all the food items relating to that. So we had to restock, which placed a little bit of a hiccup in the process. But offenders are currently allowed to order food items. And the orders are being placed, and those are being delivered. Those orders are being delivered to the offenders.
Okay, are they restricted a certain dollar amount? Are they able to go every week? Or
I believe so right now, and that really has to do with the constraint of having to deliver the orders. But that will continue to increase as time goes on.
Okay, so are they going to commissary on a weekly basis?
Yes.
That was a question that someone just sent. Okay, awesome.
I believe so.
Okay. Because that was in other words, you know, and I know that every offender doesn't have money on their books to buy from commissary, but if they do, then they can add that along with the meal that they are receiving from you guys three times a day.
Right. And you know, as always, offenders are responsible to purchase hygiene supplies for themselves, and if there is an issue and an offender needs assistance in obtaining hygiene supplies or legal supplies, we of course have a process in place to assist them with that.
Okay.
That has been in place in policy longstanding.
Okay.
So we're ensuring that that's being taken care of.
Okay. Now, with the meals that you guys have, are they being shipped in from someplace else? Are they being prepared there? Are they prepared someplace else? That's a question that came in.
They're being prepared somewhere else and delivered to us. And like I said, we're looking at our order to run out here in conjunction with the first of the month, and are looking at then preparing food ourselves.
Okay. Well, for those who are just tuning in, I am Latar Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and I am interviewing today the Director of Adult Institutions for the Missouri Department of Corrections, Mrs. Elena Boyles, and Mrs. Karen Poshman. Mrs. Poshman, say your position one more time. I don't want to mess it up.
I'm the communications director.
Communications director. See, I messed it up earlier, but these are communication directors for the Missouri Department of Corrections, and I'm interviewing them this morning. And our topic of discussion is we're talking about this lockdown that has been going on at Crossroads Correctional Facility since the middle part of May, and the lockdown came about as the result of a riot that happened at that particular institution. So. We wanted to come on here and answer questions for you, community questions for family members, and prayerfully you guys have a lot of answers. But right now, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to break now for our calendar of events. We'll return with our guests after the calendar. Elena, we'll be back with you guys shortly.
Now the calendar. Coming up on Sunday, July 29th at 8 p.m., at 3907 Cracker Neck Road in Independence, about a quarter mile west of Independence Mall, Corey's Network will be having their sixth annual vigil to honor the life of Corey and raise awareness of all of the unsolved homicides in our community. With us this morning is Shelley Metzke. Shelley, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going to happen at the vigil?
Like you said, this is our sixth annual vigil. It's in recognition of my son's murder, which was solved 3.5 years after it was committed. And what we are doing is honoring all unsolved homicides in the Kansas City metropolitan area. We're allowing the individuals, the surviving victims that want to address the group there, they can do that and also be put out on Facebook Live, which will later be transferred over to a YouTube channel so that they can share that on their web pages to try and help get their homicide solved. And then as well, we're also going to have another individual on the side that will be doing individual interviews with different homicide victims to find out any pertinent information or who their loved one was, et cetera, so that they can share that information as well.
On Tuesday, you will be having a press conference to announce a collaboration with three other groups that are working kind of in the same area with you. This will be at Max Fish at 6200 Troost, the old Mad Jacks, or 1 o'clock on Tuesday. Why don't you tell us what that's about?
There are four groups of homicide survivors advocates. They are Mama on a Mission, Corey's Network, Healing Pathways, and Justice for Destiny. And we've been working together with these other groups for the last couple of years now. And rather than seeing any type of competition, what we're doing is we are actually collaborating and enhancing each other's programs. For instance, three of us help with paying for funerals. Then there's one that helps with children, that's Healing Pathways. Then you've got Monique, which is Mom on a Mission. She's good with doing door-to-door knocks and passing out flyers about homicide victims. And then there is Justice for Destiny, who's also helping us with paying for funerals. And Corey's Network, of course, what we do is we provide referral systems, plus provide other resources on our website, and we help pay for funerals. So what we're trying to do is create a wraparound service, sort of a multidisciplinary attack on a multifaceted issue, so that we can try and decrease the homicide rate by helping those families that have gone through it.
Why don't you give your website real quick, and then we're going to have to move on back to our show.
Our network is at Corey's Network. That's CoreysNetwork.org. That's our website. And if you would like to come on and volunteer, there is an area on there that says contact us, and you can sign up as a volunteer.
Thank you very much today.
Thank you.
Hi, Ms. Boyles and Ms. Poshman, are you there?
We're here.
Okay,
we are.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you. Thank you for waiting. I've had several questions that have come in, and I have some questions coming in through social media. I want to address real quick. I want to just give a quick rundown. Visitation for some, I believe I just had someone call into the station. Visitation is resuming on August 11th. Okay. There are going to be some restrictions with visitation coming back into play. But your family member that's incarcerated at Crossroads will get some information from what I understand. And he can, you know, follow up with you in reference to visitation. Some of the complaints that we're getting, Ms. Boyles, is that family members are calling Crossroads and family members are calling Jeff City, and they're not getting any answers to their questions. So can you guys, you know, kind of explain that?
I'm not sure what specifically may be the issue relating to that, but, you know, families who have questions or concerns should be able to call the institution and ask to speak to the offender's case manager or unit manager to seek some assistance. Of course, the administration is available. In regards to phone calls specifically, I have not received an enormous amount of phone calls from people relating to Crossroads specifically, so, you know, we're happy to respond to people as they reach out. So my first instinct would be to tell you, though, that to ask for the offender's case manager is certainly the place to start, And if families feel like that issue isn't resolved, then ask for the unit manager, who should resolve their issue, attempt to resolve their issue for them.
We also have a constituent services office. So if you call the main office here in Jefferson City and ask for constituent services, they can help. And they log every phone call that comes in, and they direct family members and friends to the proper channels.
Okay.
If you go to our website, doc.mo.gov, it has information on the main office, the central office here in Jefferson City. And if you call that number and ask for constituent services, mm-hmm. or identify yourself as a friend or family member of an offender, we can get you to the right place and get you the right information.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And one thing too, another question that came in are concerns of the family members. They said they've been also contacting constituent services and they really aren't getting anywhere with that. I mean, some people say they get emails back. Some people say they don't get a response. So what would be your recommendation for those who are reaching out to constituent services and feel that they're not getting, any assistance, or they're not getting any assistance?
We definitely answer every email and every phone call that comes in. Sometimes the volume of emails and phone calls can be pretty high, so
okay.
It might take a little bit longer to get back to people, but we definitely try to be as responsive as possible to everyone who contacts us.
Okay.
Another option is to check our website frequently for news. If you go to the facilities page, we have updates on things that are happening at the facilities. And we soon hope to roll out a new email and text message messaging system so that friends and family members can sign up to receive announcements every time something happens like this at a facility. We'll give updates on things like new programs, visiting. If the phones are down, we can give updates like that. So in the next few weeks, we hope to roll that out so that people can sign up to get notifications. So they'll find out every time something is happening at an institution and if their loved one is affected.
Okay, awesome. Well, really quick, I want to give the announcement because I see I have like a flood of requests coming in through social media. People are inboxing me questions. If you have some questions that you would like me to ask, and we haven't already covered those questions, please feel free to call into the station, which we're getting calls here as well. But I want to go ahead and announce the number. It's 816-931-5534. And if I can get to your question, I most definitely will. Now, Ms. Boyles, I want to say this. When we met in Jeff City, you said something, or I can't remember if it was you or Director Presythe. One of you all had mentioned that you really did not consider this a riot. It was more so like I think riot was a harsh, kind of harsh. Usually when you think a riot, you think, someone's, officers are getting killed, inmates are getting killed, and that didn't happen here. So what is your take on that?
Correct. When it came down to the conclusion of this incident, ultimately we had no staff injuries whatsoever. We also had really minimal injuries in relationship to the offenders that were involved. In either hitting or kicking doors or windows, we saw some offenders that had some injuries that required minimal medical treatment on site. Nobody left. I think it was approximately 10 offenders, maybe. And then we didn't have anybody that required any medical treatment off site. So it really was more property damage than anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, riot, as far as a lot of times there's a larger connotation of violence associated with the term riot, which isn't really so applicable because the bulk of our issue here was just specifically property damage.
Okay. Because one thing the family members, a lot of people have issues with, okay, is that, from what we hear, the majority of the prisoners at Crossroads were actually when this disturbance occurred down in the chow hall in that area, that most of the prisoners were actually in their cells and they were not part of the disturbance at all. So, they were pretty upset that it's like everyone has been punished. Everyone's been punished for what, you know, a select few or, you know, inmates did. And, you know, they feel that was, you know, pretty unfair for the other offenders or inmates that didn't have anything to do with it. So can you kind of explain, you know, how you guys, you know, how are you separating or dealing with those that really did, that were responsible for this versus the many, many inmates that weren't responsible for this,
of course, we spent an exhaustive amount of time investigating the matter, and there are still some parts of the investigation that are not complete at this point. We have a disciplinary process that includes conduct violations, and a quantity of offenders have been issued conduct violations and for their involvement in this incident. And then there's a due process for those offenders to be given a potential consequence for their involvement in that. For some offenders, that could lead to potential prosecution. But also, just in general, dealing with the safety and security issues and the maintenance and repair of the damage that was completed. Of course, we can't give full access to everyone until that maintenance and repair work is completed in those areas. So that's certainly been part of the process. The other part of the process is that safety on everyone's part is our primary concern.
Yes.
The safety of the staff as well as the safety of the offenders. People have a lot of feelings in relationship to incidences like this, and you certainly don't want to inadvertently give access to someone to vent their feelings in an inappropriate way. So that plays a part in ensuring that we're a little more, we have a little more due diligence in allowing movement and access, and in ensure that we're taking steps slowly so that people are safe in the process.
Okay.
I think there's a misconception that the lockdown is somehow punitive or it's intended to punish the offenders at Crossroads. That's not the purpose of the lockdown. The purpose of the lockdown is to make sure that we can ensure the safety and security of the facility as quickly as possible, that we make sure we do a thorough job of completing repairs and cleanup and investigating. So it's not intended to be punitive. We understand it might feel that way for people who are not involved in the incident, and that's the vast majority of people who are in the facility. But we have to do what's necessary to make sure the facility is safe.
Right. Well, and that's understandable. And I pray that answers a lot of the people's questions, because that is how they feel, that, you know, it was to punish the inmates, you know, for the incident that happened, that, you know, and a lot of the family members do feel that way. So prayerfully, that has shed some light for them. But moving forward, you know, because I hear the complaints of the inmates as a prisoner advocate, and then I know the side that you all at DOC are dealing with. But what do you think happened that caused this disturbance? What do you think happened here?
It's certainly not been a secret that we certainly are a little short-staffed. And I think as we've had to make some adjustments in the operations of the institution, I think communication was part of the issue.
Okay.
As we were making adjustments to services provided and offenders' access to services within the institution, as adjustments were being made, I think offenders felt like that wasn't being communicated effectively with them, which started a progression towards people being frustrated.
Okay.
As we mentioned before, we have a tremendous number of programs and services, you know, happening at our facilities every day, and every service and every program requires additional staff. So So in order to have things like Puppies for Parole program where offenders are training dogs, or their sort of justice garden where offenders are growing vegetables for donation to local food banks, or academic education programs, vocational education programs, all of those things require a lot of staff, and all of those things are extremely valuable to the offenders and help to prepare them for release back into the community and help to reduce recidivism, thus making our communities safer. If we don't have sufficient staff to operate all of those programs, we have to reduce the number of programs or the amount of time that offenders are allowed to participate in them. And that can be very frustrating for the people who are, you know, accustomed to having access to these kinds of services.
Right.
So I think because the frustration level is building.
Right. And I believe that you're correct there. I believe it created like a pressure pot. That's what I told a individual from the media the other day, that it was like a pressure pot. And from what, you know, the many inmates that reach out to me, you know, how they described it is, I believe it started as like a silent protest in the dining hall, and then things just kind of, you know, went out of hand. It went from there. But when I asked the offenders, the guys there, you know, well, what's the deal? What are you guys so upset about? And that's one of the main things that I heard, is that, you know, there were lack of programs at the facility. And, you know, as you guys just said, you know, this kind of goes back and accounts to, you know, some issues with staffing there. So knowing that there's staffing issues there, you know, what is the department doing to address the staffing issues?
So we are actively recruiting. We're attending as many job fairs as possible. We're actively recruiting on social media. We're doing targeted ads to cell phones. We are doing, if you check out our Facebook page, you see a lot more testimonials from staff and a lot more positive stories about things that we're doing in the department. We've done billboards in targeted areas. In Northwest Missouri, we have a recruitment team just for Northwest Missouri, so that we're actively recruiting there. We're working on an apprenticeship program with the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. We're working with the military to try and recruit retired military staff. We're also working with the National Guard to see if we can recruit unemployed reservists with the National Guard. We are doing incentives for our own staff to refer people. We have a partnership with LinkedIn, so you can find us on LinkedIn. We are also working on our own staff development in order to improve our working environment. We trained more than 2,000 supervisors this year in some consistent supervisory practices. That included how to have a difficult conversation in an appropriate way, conflict resolution, how to communicate the right way with staff, and how to reflect how much we appreciate the staff that we have. We now have a new evaluation process for staff called Engage, and Engage requires a monthly meeting between the supervisor and the staff, which is really about professional development and fostering a good working relationship between the staff and the supervisor. Last summer, we participated in a survey, and really staff said they didn't know what direction we were going as a department. And so we have put together a strategic plan that has over 70 initiatives on it, and we are currently sharing that with every staff member so that every staff member understands how they fit into our mission within the department about how we improve lives for safer communities. And that we are working on our safer work environment, that we are working on improving our workforce, and that we are also working on reducing risk and recidivism. We also have some initiatives specifically targeted at the offender population. So in October, we are looking forward to rolling out tablets for the offenders. This will give offenders access to email through their tablet. It'll give them access to purchase music. It'll give them access to books and educational resources. It'll also allow them to search for some jobs as well. Our reentry unit within the department has been actively networking with a variety of resources from across the state to help us find jobs for offenders, have resources come into the institutions to help offenders prepare for their release. We've been doing interviews on iPads so that offenders have a job in place as they walk out the door, which we're really excited about.
It's really a two-pronged approach. On one hand, we're trying to increase recruitment and retention of staff. On the other hand, we also want to reduce the prison population, and the best way to do that is to reduce recidivism. So we're putting a lot of effort into making sure that people who are released from prison don't come back from prison, that they have the tools that they need to be successful once they've been released.
Right. And that goes back to programs, getting the programs back, you know, up, going, and running, and also being open to new programs to come within the prisons. And I know that
Right.
we discussed
Absolutely.
That in Jefferson City as well, that you guys do have some new programs at other prisons, and prayerfully we'll be able to get some of those like programs down there at Crossroads. So I can most definitely, I'm sorry, were you getting ready to say something, Ms. Boyles?
Oh, another initiative that we have going on is called Justice Reinvestment, and really the purpose of Justice Reinvestment is to invigorate the services that we offer to offenders that are under field supervision. And that if the offender reflects that they're starting to have some issues or struggle, that we have some interventions that we can offer them while they're in the field to keep them in the field instead of returning them or sending them into an institution, which is certainly a much more cost-effective strategy for the taxpayers, and much more practically advantageous for the offender, because we certainly want them to stay in their community and with their family and on their job whenever possible.
We're launching a pilot program this summer in Boone, Butler, and Buchanan counties that will provide things like behavioral health services for offenders newly released from our facilities, and we'll give them sort of a head start in trying to get themselves together and be successful.
Okay. And so moving forward, we can let the families know that we have programs at Crossroads, and there'll be new programs coming to Crossroads.
Yes, in Crossroads, and once people are released from Crossroads as well. So people who are on parole will have access, to these programs where they get behavioral health treatment and, sort of reentry services, help with finding housing and jobs and education.
Okay. Well, we're coming down to the end of the show, so I just want to just give you guys an opportunity to just kind of say some last-minute things to the community, because we're just about out of time here.
First and foremost, I really appreciate your time today so that we could potentially clear up some misunderstandings or some misconceptions from the public about what's going on in Crossroads and our intent to continue to move forward and get back to a more normal operation.
Right. And I want to say this real quick for those who are listening. As you heard her say, they will be meeting with their staff on a regular basis. I want to say this too. When we met with them in Jeff City, we spoke about meeting with us, community leaders, prison advocates, meeting with us on a quarterly basis. So I want everyone to know it doesn't just stop with us going in for the town hall meeting or us just going to Jeff City the week prior to that, but we all plan and continue to stay connected and to keep communication open, because as the prisoner advocates, we're the voice for the inmates. They're open to speaking with us and hearing out the inmates' concerns. And I think that's very important, and I also applaud you guys on that. So most definitely do. So Ms. Poshman, do you have anything that you would like to say? We have just a couple of minutes left.
Well, I hope that people will continue to reach out to us. We want to keep the lines of communication open. If you have questions, please contact central office. If you are receiving emails and messages, if you can forward those to us, we'll be happy to help reach out to those people. So we want to make sure that people stay informed.
Okay. And Ms. Boyles, what about you? You have any last words for the people?
I appreciate your time and I appreciate your support, because certainly those lines of communications remaining open are so very important. And I reiterate what Karen said, if people have questions, please reach out to us. We're happy to respond.
Okay. So everyone, for those that are listening, maybe that don't follow me on social media, if you would like to call, you have any other further questions, you can reach me at 816-456-9776, or you can email me at lsmith@kcfreedomproject.org. And of course, we have a Facebook page, and of course, you can contact me on my personal Facebook page. And I would be more than happy to address any of your concerns. And for all my incarcerated brothers that are at Crossroads that are listening, because I know several of you are today, my words to you are to stay encouraged and hold on, okay? We are a voice for you out here in the community. We hear your concerns. We are concerned about your concerns and your issues. And we are most definitely here to stand in the gap for you. And, this is just, it's kind of a difficult situation. It's a two-sided thing. You have the voices of you inmates that were not being heard, but now you are. And then we also have the voices of the staff there at the prison, okay, that were not being heard. And now their voices are being heard as well. So both parties, both sides have the ear of DOC officials. And I think that's very important. And prayerfully moving forward, we'll be able to get you guys back to regular movement. Everyone be safe at the prison, because that's the major concern, is safety for everyone, and get you guys back to regular movement. Mrs. Boyles and Mrs. Karen, I want to thank you for coming on today. It's been a blessing speaking with you, and you guys have a blessed and wonderful day.
Thank you. Same to you.
You're welcome.
Good morning. My name is Keith Brownhill, and today my commentary is entitled "The Fake Patriotism of Donald Trump and the Gullibility of Those Who Continue to Support Him." The views expressed in this commentary are solely those of the author and do not reflect the opinions of Jaws of Justice Radio staff, the management of KKFI, or the Midcoast Radio Project. Donald Trump is without a doubt the most pathetic joke this country has ever had for a president. There is no one in America who has been more unpatriotic or treasonous than he, both before and after his trip to Russia. Yet Donald Trump had the unmitigated gall to return to this country and resume his bogus crusade against NFL players for refusing to stand during the national anthem in protest of well-documented American injustices. This is obviously a ploy by Donald Trump to divert American public attention away from the fact that he could not find the courage to stand up to Vladimir Putin concerning Russia's interference in the 2016 election. Putin even admitted that he wanted Trump to win the election. Obviously, this is because Russia is an enemy of America, and Putin knew that an idiot like Trump would be disastrous for this country. But rather than criticize Putin, even in the face of overwhelming evidence of Russia's guilt, Trump chose to stand before the Russian people, criticize and attack Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and even attempted to discredit the irrefutable evidence uncovered by U.S. intelligence agencies and officials. Despite the fact that Trump continues to do things that are hurting this country and many of the people who are giving him their support, there still seems to be nothing he can do, no matter how terrible it is, that will erode his fan base. This does not make people who continue to support him look very patriotic or smart. In fact, several studies have already shown that Trump supporters are the least educated people in the nation. I guess in America, Republican and conservative politics can even triumph over the love some claim to have for this country. Since Trump has been in office, he and his favorite sycophant, Rudy Giuliani, have continuously bragged about how unimpeachable Trump is, and that he could even issue a pardon for himself if necessary. During the 2016 election campaign, Trump actually mocked his own supporters by stating that he could even kill somebody in the middle of Times Square and that they would still support him. In so many words, what Trump was actually saying is that this is just how dumb the people who support him really are, and they will continue to support him no matter what he does. Well, he can now add treason to the list of criminal acts, which apparently he can also commit and still not lose his supporters. My name is Keith Brownell. Thank you for listening.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.